Well, here we are in the first Sunday of Advent. We start a brand new sermon series as we begin Advent. The very word Advent itself means coming, okay? And if we look at the Latin word that we get Advent from, Adventus was to mean the coming of the Lord. And what we understand is since the very first coming of Christ over 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem, people have been preparing themselves for his next coming. So what we do every year is we look at Advent, we prepare ourselves for the coming of the Christ child again, and we prepare ourselves for his second coming, for we know as faithful people that's coming also. So what I really want to look at for us in this Advent is, what is preparing ourselves for Christmas all about? How are we doing that today? And as I was having those thoughts this week, we were visiting for Thanksgiving, I went and to the grocery store, and I saw the Thanksgiving Good Friday edition of the newspaper. And this thing was huge. It was absolutely amazing. And as I picked that thing up and started to look at it, I realized there's not very much news in here. It was all sales brochures and coupons and things. And it was telling me a story about how I need to prepare for Christmas. It said, Tom, you need more stuff. And here is some of the stuff you need. And what I was amazed at, did you see the flat-screen TVs? Holy cow, you can get a huge flat-screen TV for what you used to get like a computer monitor for. It's amazing. This thing was telling me, Tom, you need cooler stuff. You need new stuff. You need more stuff. It's all about stuff. And Tom, this is how you prepare for Christmas. And that really got me to thinking. Is that really what we need, more stuff? Because here's what happens to Kim and I as we prepare ourselves for Christmas. A lot of the times as we prepare ourselves for Christmas, we start asking ourselves, did we get so-and-so enough? You know, and did we get mom enough, or did we get dad enough? And then we think to ourselves and we look at the boys and we say, well, did we get Ross enough? Or did we get Cole more than we got Ross? And we try and even those out. And you know, we're talking about buying more stuff and getting enough. And when we do that, what are we trying to prove? If we get them enough stuff, does that show that we love them more? Or did we get them enough stuff to prove them that we love them? You know, these are the things that we think about as we prepare for Christmas. But really, the question that we're really trying to answer here is, how do you celebrate the birthday of a homeless child who became our king? That's really the question. That's really the question that gets answered there. So I started thinking about, Tom, what gifts do you remember? Growing up and as an adult, what gifts do you remember? And here's what I thought about. The gifts that I remember giving are the gifts that I made myself, or the gifts that I put time into that really didn't cost me anything. I made a great gift in the Boy Scouts when I was a kid, and my parents loved it. What we did is we were instructed by our scout leader is we needed to save all of our old egg cartons for a couple of months. And then we needed to go around the house and the school, and we needed to find all those coffee cans that had been filled with the wee little crayons. You know, you use a crayon, and you get start peeling the paper off. You get down to the end, you have that stuff, and you don't use that anymore. And then some of the crayons, like especially the lighter colors, they get marked up by all the other crayons. You don't want to use that. For some reason, we put those in coffee cans. I don't know if they still do that or not. We all had these old crayons. And then there were some candle stubs. You know, our parents weren't throwing out candle stubs. We brought those in. So we had our egg cartons, and we had our old crayons and candle stubs. And then he instructed us to go and have your mom save all the lint out of the dryer. And that's exactly what we did. Do you know how much lint a dryer produces? If you save it over a couple of months, you get like a garbage bag of lint. It's amazing. So what we did is we all came together as scouts, and we took the egg cartons and we stuffed the egg cartons. Every little hole we stuffed full of lint. And then we had somebody melting the crayons and the candle wax, and he came along and he filled all those little holes stuffed with lint with this candle wax. And then after it was dried, we cut them all apart and we gave them to our parents as fire starters. You just light that lint and man, it just burns like a little candle. And you just put it in your fireplace and it starts the fire. They thought that was great. That cost me nothing. That's the one gift that I remember giving. That and the shoeshine kit that I gave my dad when I was 7. But those two things. Now, a gift that I remember getting, I still have. It's a set of CDs, and it says Dad's CD on it, and it's in the writing of my 7-year-old son. And he just followed me around and listened to the music that I was listening to and listened to me talk and figured out the things that I liked, and he went and he got all those songs off of the internet, and he burned them onto a CD and gave it to me. I still have that. What did that cost him? I don't know, maybe 99 cents or something for the CD? That is giving more, spending less. It's simplifying of how we give at Christmas time. And this Christmas, I want to see if we can do a little bit more of that, if we can get a message from the prophets and do a little bit more of that. But really, what I want to talk about today is simplifying in such a way and that you know that the very best gift that you can give anyone at Christmas is hope, especially somebody who's living in a dark place and may not have much hope in their lives at this time. And that's the gift of hope. I want you to remind you also in your bulletin, there's a little set of sermon notes. If you want to follow along, it's just an outline. If there's something you want to remember today, you want to jot down, that's why that's there. And we just hope and pray that is God speaking to us. Okay, so we heard from Jeremiah this morning, and we're going to be looking at the prophets. And here's what I want you to know. In your Old Testament, when you look at your Old Testament, it's broken down into three sections, okay? You have the Pentateuch, you have the Torah, the Law of Moses, that's the first section, and then you have the writings. That takes us from the historical books up through the Hebrew poetry, including Psalms. And then that third group that you have, that's the prophets. And when you get to the prophets, most of the prophets that have their name on a book, they were prophesying somewhere between 800 and 500 B.C. That was a very tumultuous time in the life of Israel, the people. So that's where we find most of those prophets. And they were prophesying to Israel during a time when Israel really needed some help. During a difficult time. And there's four things that I really want you to get as we talk about the prophets that they came talking about. And the first thing is that these prophets came talking not about foretelling the future, but about seeking change in the present. We read the prophets and we say, oh, they're fortune tellers. They were telling everybody what was going to happen to them. When in fact, what the prophets were really interested in was change what you're doing or this is going to happen to you. Their primary message was change in the present, not foretelling the future. That's the first thing that I want you to get. The second thing that I want you to get is the prophets almost always rooted for the underdog. If the prophets were watching football on Thursday, they would have been rooting for the Detroit Lions, okay? Because the Lions always lose on Thanksgiving. I think they actually won this year, but they always lose on Thanksgiving, okay? You look for the people who are pushed down, made to feel small, oppressed, the people who are hurting or in pain, the people that didn't have any voice. You find them, and there you'll find the prophet rooting for them, sticking up for them, talking to them, giving them hope. That's the second thing. They always rooted for the underdog. The third thing about the prophets, they came with two messages. And those two messages were about the primary sins of the people in that day. The first message was idolatry. And the second message was injustice. Okay, idolatry. You know what idolatry is. Idolatry is anytime you take something and you make it your God in place of God. Whether it's a thing or a person, it becomes between you and God, and it becomes the thing that's most important to you. And this is something that Israel was very good at and did over and over and over again. In the land of Canaan, they took the Baals, or the Canaanite gods, and they worshiped them. And they were just statues of stone and wood and metal. And God was telling that to them through the prophets. Why are you worshiping them? I'm the one who brought you out of Egypt. I'm the one who led you here. I'm the one who promised you this land. I'm the one who gave you this land. But you turn away from me, and you worship these objects of wood and stone and metal. And that was the first message that the prophets came to the people with. Don't turn away from God in this idolatry. Over and over again, we hear this. And there were metaphors for this. In Hosea, we hear the metaphor of parent and child, right? And that metaphor of parent and child, it's God saying that through this prophet, through the mouthpiece of God. That's what the Navi, the prophet is, a mouthpiece of our spokesman of God. And it's God saying, I was a loving father to you. I loved you tenderly. I gave you everything I said I would. But you turn away from me and you worship other gods. And it's God saying, I can't take it anymore. And then we go on to the metaphor of husband and wife. And God says, as a loving husband, I loved you and I've given you everything. I loved you tenderly and I've accepted you back. But you go off and you have adulterous affairs. You come back and you nod in my direction and then you go sleep with somebody else. Can you feel the pain, this pathos of God, this incredible experience that God is having when his children walk away and forsake him for others? That's idolatry. That's the first thing. And the second thing is injustice. Injustice in the Old Testament, we find it two Hebrew words, mishpat and tzedakah. And they really mean the same thing. Over 1,000 times we find these words. And this meaning of injustice here, what God is trying to get across through his prophets is, You need to be doing the things from your heart that treat others the right way in the essence of who I am, your God. It's doing meaningful things from the heart and helping others. And these two words, mishpat and tzedakah, are used interchangeably. And what the prophets are talking about is going and finding those people who are pushed down. Going and find those people who are in pain or need hope. Go and find those people who are being treated unfairly and inequitably, and you bring justice to them. That's mishpah, that's tzedakah. You stand up for those who can't speak for themselves. And we find, Jesus tells us this in a very simple sentence, right? You know, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Golden rule, that's where we find it. So we have idolatry and we have this injustice. You know, and the people didn't understand that. They were like, we don't get it. We fast, we pray, we do all these things, and God isn't blessing us. Why is this happening? And God responds to the prophets and says, because the fast you give is not the fast I need. The fast that I need is when you go and you clothe the naked and feed the hungry. And you speak up for the poor. That's the fast that I'm looking for. When you don't hide yourself from your own kin. Love those words. And you can see in these two sins that the prophet's talking about, you can see what we talk about here, right? We talk about the vertical relationship with God. God's sending the prophet saying, move away from your idolatrous ways. Your one relationship should be vertical. It should be the one God. That should be where you're existing. And by the way, your injustice, you're not helping the poor. That's the horizontal. That's the helping everyone else. So it's loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and it's loving your neighbor as yourself. This was the message of the prophets. And the prophets were saying, if you don't do these things, things aren't going to go very well for you. They're just not going to go very well. Rich Stearns wrote a book. Rich Stearns was the CEO of World Vision. And he wrote a book called The Hole in Your Gospel. And what his book is all about is, if you only have one of these things, the vertical relationship with God, and you're not helping others, or you're helping others and you don't have a relationship with God, there's a hole in your gospel. Is your gospel a hole, or does it have a hole in it? That was the point of his book. And he said it takes those two things, and that is what these prophets are talking about. And that's what Jesus said in his very first sermon, right? The Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. That's why he was here. James tells us what the true definition of religion is. The true definition of religion is to be undefiled before God and to care for widows and orphans. That's what we get. Brian McLaren said this. Brian said, the gospel is not primarily how to get to heaven, but the how to get heaven here on earth. These are great things. These are the two parts of the gospel that we talk about so often that we find in the New Testament, the evangelical and the social gospel, but they're right here in the prophets, and that's what we find. And what happens is we're called, as we have our whole gospel, W-H-O-L-E, our whole gospel is to love God and to go out and change people's lives. It's to go out and show people the kind of hope that the prophets brought to the people in those days, to be the bearers of that kind of light. So in the name of Christ, we go out and we bear hope. The fourth thing that the prophets came with, and they came with a dual message. It was a message of warning and a message of comfort. Almost always you find these two warnings. And as Israel and Judah were in a place where they were fasting and praying and they didn't understand why God wasn't blessing them anymore, you don't have to really look too far to figure out this message. The prophets were telling them the only reason you're not being blessed, the only reason Assyria hasn't come and taken you, the only reason these things haven't happened is because God has been on your side. And then we come to these prophets and they start talking about what's going to happen. And we know what happened. We know in 722 when, Israel was a prime piece of real estate right there in the Fertile Crescent, huge Egypt to the south, and we have Assyria to the north. These were huge countries. These nations wanted that little piece of property because that was the main trade route, east and west. And finally in 722, Assyria comes down with 200,000 troops. And they look at Israel and they say, you're done. And that's exactly what happens. God removes his hand of protection. And all but 150,000 refugees who travel south into Judah, the rest of them are taken off into Assyria. They're married off into the population and gone forever. Because God has removed his hand of protection. They were no longer a light to the nations, the scriptures tell us. They were no longer teaching humanity how to be in relationship with humanity. Therefore, they had lost the relationship with God. And then in 586 BC, after 30 years of Jeremiah prophesying, now remember, 185,000 troops had already tried to take little Judah, and they were repelled because God's hand was there. But then they come again, and Jeremiah is saying to them, just give up. It'll go better for you if you just surrender to the Babylonians. It'll go better. You might live. But they didn't do that. And they were wiped out. 4,600 of Jerusalem's rulers were taken off into captivity in Babylon. It was a terrible, terrible time. And you know something? That's the way it is in our lives sometimes too. We get off track from this way that God wants us to go. We get off and we get to a point where we say, well, God is punishing us. No, it's not that God is punishing us. It's anytime we distance ourselves from God, we move off to a place where bad things happen. And here's the thing. The prophets always come with a word of warning and a word of comfort. And even during their time, before Judah ever went off into exile, Jeremiah is giving these words of comfort to the exile. He's writing them words of comfort before the battle has even happened. In his foretelling of their future, just give yourselves up. But the best thing is, God is always there with this message of hope. God is always saying, it'll be okay. And that's the word. And you know, when I hear these words, I'm not really thinking about Judah in 500 BC. I'm thinking about Wayne in 2019, because these are words that we need to hear too. God is always there with that word of hope. And you know, some of you come to me and you say to me, you know something, Pastor Tom? I feel so bad. How could God ever forgive me? How could God ever take me back? I know what I've done. I've done exactly the things God told me not to do. I've done it. And I walk into this church and I can barely even walk into the church. God can't take me back. And I say to that person, I say, do you have any kids? He says, yeah, I have kids. And I say, is there anything that your kid could do? Is there any terrible sin that your kid could commit, that your son or daughter could commit? And after that, they come back to you and they say, Dad, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I've really messed up this time. I'm so sorry, Dad. Is there any way you can take me back? Can you forgive me? I say, is there any sin that your son or daughter could do against you that if they came back and said those words, it wouldn't take them back? And they say, no, can't think of anything. Well, then why in the world would you think your heavenly Father wouldn't take you back if you came to him with those words? Is not God the one who's rich in mercy and generous with love? That's the kind of God that we have. It's this God of second chances, and that's what the prophets came saying. And the prophets began to promise this new king, this Messiah, the anointed one who would come. Not like the kings of old, because even the good ones messed up. Let's face it, we look at them, they fell short. But there was this king that God would bring, and this would be a Messiah, one who's anointed, who would rule with righteousness and justice, who would be a wonderful counselor, a prince of peace, king of eternity. And for generations and generations, they watched for that king, but they didn't quite know what they were looking for. And we find that king, that wonderful counselor, in a baby born in Bethlehem a couple thousand years ago. And we, as followers of Jesus Christ, say he is our king. Now here's the thing. When you're a king, you don't do all the work yourself, right? When you're a king, you have subjects. You roll up your sleeves, you do some hard work, you cast vision, you create the mission, and then all these people go out. And that's who you are. And I want to tell you today in this message of hope, this hope that comes not only to people of old, but comes to the dark corners of our neighborhoods today, the bearers of that hope are you. I just want to tell you I'm so proud of you, because I get to witness the food pantry. They did something different with the food pantry this week in Thanksgiving. They gave a little list to be created by all of the recipients who come into the food pantry. If you could wish for anything for your Thanksgiving table, what would it be? And most of them put down turkey and mashed potatoes, but there were some who put down salmon or roast beef. And we were able to go out and get all those things for all those people. I wish you could have been here to see the people come, and they come in and they get a bag, and it's all the things that they wrote on their wish list. It's the most amazing story. Listen to these words again that Jeremiah says. Jeremiah, writing to the people who are in exile, telling them, he says, this is what the Lord say. You say about this place, it's a desolate waste without people or animals. Yet, there will be sounds of joy and gladness, the voices of bride and bridegroom, for those who bring their thank offerings give thanks to the Lord. The sounds of joy and gladness. If you could have been here back in that back lobby, you would have heard the mirth and the joy and the gladness as those people picked up those bags and went out the door. And the week before that, it was IHN. And next week, it's going to be the toy train filling up. And then the week after that, it's going to be Chosen 300. But what I want you to know, you are the bearers of hope for people who live in dark places. In all the things that you do, and I'm so proud of you for doing that, you get this. And that is so important. Because you're the follower of a king who longs to be more than just someone who saves people, but someone who changes the world. And I want to tell you right now, the best Christmas you could give, the best gift you could give at Christmas, is that very first gift of hope to someone in your circle, someone in your neighborhood, someone at your workplace. So that's the invitation to us today. The invitation to us is we hear the prophets, seek to live more simply, and seek to be the bearers